It's good to see you. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you. Honorable board members, my name is Stephen Moore. I'm the vice chair of the State Water Board and liaison to the great North Coast region of the state. And it's a pleasure to be here. And today I'm probably going to focus a little more on recent activities of interest to the North Coast region, the board and staff and stakeholders here, and some upcoming items. It's pretty busy these days. I mean, when is it not, right? But first, a little housekeeping. As I told you last time, there are a lot of changes in upper management at the State Water Board. And a week and a half ago, we made the official announcement of the appointment of our new executive director, Ms. Eileen Sobeck. And there were many qualified candidates. As I've told you before, we had great internal candidates and external candidates. And Eileen's background is a great deal of experience at the federal level, and she was most recently head nationwide of the NOAA Fisheries Agency under National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also known as NIMFS, National Marine Fisheries Service. I've always wondered about that. It's sort of, which one are you today? But it's that group. And they're actually what we learned in getting to know her and her background, we learned a little bit about the organization of NIMFS is quite decentralized and kind of a parallel complexity to our State Water Board, Regional Water Board setup. So interestingly, I think the five of us state board members agreed that Eileen was the best selection or the best candidate from an internal perspective, whereas our strongest internal candidate was the best candidate from an external standpoint in terms of how it would be viewed, because we're sensitive to interests in our state that would view this appointment as somehow saying the State Water Board is a fisheries agency. We are a water agency that's in our mission is to strike a balance between beneficial uses. So there will be a messaging challenge for us going forward, but we're excited because we have a great deal of faith in Eileen's temperament, experience, and just even-handedness and an openness to really reaching across the different interests. And she had a really good experience working with the commercial recreational fishers. It was a group that didn't have a super relationship with the Federal Fisheries Agency, and she made some progress in that relationship, recognizing the importance of recreational fishing as a stakeholder in fisheries management, obviously, but also a connection to the public. And also she made strides in improving relationships between the National Fishery Agency and state fishery agencies, because that's never been the warmest relationship going back either. So just a couple of insights into that appointment. And her first day is going to be the day after Labor Day. And we'll bring her in on our workshop on the proposed dredge and fill regulations as kind of a way to bring her into the water board full, ease her into something straightforward, right? So with that, I just wanted to remind the board, and the North Coast Board's always been great about attending our annual event when all the regional and state water board members get together. This year is going to be Wednesday, October 25th, and a half day on Thursday, October 26th at the Cal EPA building in Sacramento. And like last year, we put together a smaller planning committee of chairs to help put the agenda together. We're always interested in bringing the regional board sensibilities to this event, but I think we've been turning up the volume on that and really creating more of a joint effort between state and regional boards on what we're going to talk about and how and who we're going to hear from, and really featuring a little bit more of the regional board member perspectives in terms of all of our wealth of experience of the different appointees in our different regional boards. And so we've invited that. Our subject matter this year will be a lot of focus on climate change, climate change mitigation, and climate change adaptation. and how our different decisions in terms of funding and regulatory decisions reflect strengthening our state's resiliency to these changes that are scientifically documented and happening, and we are already grappling with how we adjust our water systems to deal with climate change, which is a fact of life here in California. And so that's a half a day. We're going to go over the latest science. We're going to hear from Scripps, Oceanographic Institute, and other leading scientists, including a regional board member who's on the Santa Ana, or was on the Santa Ana board, now is on the LA board, Jay Famiglietti. He's from JPL. And we'll also then hear from the governor's administration on different initiatives on dealing with climate change. And then the last part of that, we'll have regional board members discuss initiatives for climate change adaptation policies as an outgrowth of our action in March, which I told you about, which is a nine-page resolution on how the different state board offices and departments and the regional boards already deal with climate change. So that's going to be a big part of it. But the next day, you know, you mentioned the difficulty in certain regulatory programs with thousands of enrollees. You know, it's a big state, and the regions are large, and there's a lot of businesses and individuals that need regulatory oversight and that sort of thing. And so, you know, how do we, as the water boards, have credibility in terms of these programs? You know, really, that we have adequate oversight, so those that don't follow the rules are held to account, and so forth. And one of the ideas that the chairs kicked around was the use of innovative technology to monitor compliance. So we're going to drill down into data collection, data management techniques, how we can procure things at the State Water Board to enable more adept use of technology in the field. And actually, we're going to highlight the CIPS program, which is the Cannabis Information Program. I forget what it stands for. CIPS. Cannabis was in it. It's not MIPS anymore. We don't say marijuana, we say cannabis. So CIPS. So, but this was a great effort between our information technology folks, the regional board staff, Fish and Wildlife, water rights staff, to use technology to and satellite imagery to help us manage the situation, which is overwhelming in some ways. But on the other hand, we know this is really bread and butter. You know, this is really down to earth as far as what we need to do to be effective as water quality regulators. And so we're going to take it on, you know, and SB 837 says, State Water Board, you have to take it on. And in order to get a license through the California Department of Food and Agriculture, a cultivator of cannabis has to follow the rules that are set forth by the State Water Board and implemented by the regional water boards. And so that relates to your point, Board Member Corbett. We did have a hearing, a workshop on the cannabis guidelines and proposed guidelines that went public in July. And it's a fairly comprehensive program, and it has a lot of interesting dimensions that we can't go into really right now, but just there's a water rights component. There's the water quality component, where we're building on this region and Central Valley region's orders to formulate a new general order. And we understand, as with other cases, you know, the migration of the regulated community from the regional to the state board order will be an issue, and we're going to be working with you closely to make that as smooth a transition as possible. There's a whole stakeholder outreach coordination component, and we're working on an online portal for water quality and water rights permits to really make this easier to deal with. We, at the hearing, it was interesting because we got some feedback that, you know, from some stakeholders saying it looks like the water board's really concerned with making this easy for everybody, you know, but there's really serious impacts out there. And where's, you know, the urgency, the sense of urgency in terms of environmental protection and that sort of thing. I will assure everyone that that's implicit to our action, you know, that we want to set this up in a way that's fair and equitable to other agricultural commodities. You mentioned that, you know, we're still talking about cultivation. And we do bring in the issue of nitrogen management, which is an issue everywhere, but maybe more in the valleys than in this region. but it's still an issue here, and you see that in impairments from nutrients in this region, that this is contributing to that issue. So it's something that I want to assure all the public that we're doing our very best to engage with this regional board and the others to make this as smooth a transition as possible. And that's an ongoing process. And as you say, we're planning to culminate in adopted orders in the next few months to meet the rapid pace expected by SB 837. And so it has caused some reorganization, you know, of our priorities and what our staff is working on. But we see synergies at the board member level of these efforts in trying to modernize our accounting for water budgets in all the watersheds of the state of California. You know, that this is an opportunity for us to harmonize water quality and water rights, water diversions, and holistic water management, consistent with integrated water management principles. So we're always keeping that in mind in terms of multiple benefits, and this program provides a forum to really achieve those synergies. Well, good. So we'll be in touch on that. I wanted to point out a couple things. You know, there's an element of the State Water Board, as you know. We're the financing arm, and we work with the regional boards to develop priorities, as well as the drinking water division's district offices. And it's always fun for me to tell you a little bit about some of the financing in the region. We did make, in a wastewater project, we made $500,000 available through the Office of Sustainable Water Solutions, $500,000 to the Lake Shastina Community Services District for their wastewater system rehabilitation and upgrade. We also wanted to let you know about the small town of Phillipsville. You familiar with that? You go by, you know, south of Rio Del. We're in the drinking water side installing a new well to replace a shallow well that had gone dry during the 2014 drought. And that was $130,000 for that. So you may have heard about the Drinking Water for Schools program. It was SB 828, you know, and with a national awareness about lead in drinking water. And then our legislature passing this new bill last year, just letting you know, in May, we did adopt the guidelines for this program and selected a contractor, which is Rural Community Assistance Corporation, as the technical assistance provider for school districts. So this is an area where, you know, people say, well, how is the lead issue in California? And we say, well, in the public water systems, we're really good, you know, in terms of just the general what's coming out of the treatment plants. But as you know, the plumbing in people's houses and the interaction with the chemistry of the water system really determines what comes out of the tap. And so when we say, how's drinking water lead issue in schools, we say, we don't know. And so this program is going to help us understand that better and really focus on a critical public health issue for our kids in this state, you know, to make sure that drinking water in schools is safe. So that's an ongoing issue, a lot going on in the next month over that. On the sustainable water stuff, there's also Humboldt County, Samoa Peninsula received $500,000 for planning of their wastewater project. And we've talked about the stormwater side. City of Ukiah received $500,000 in planning money for stormwater and the stormwater resource plans that are underway here in this region, which I'm very interested in that issue and will continue to track it closely here and in other regions. You may have heard that we're going to update the bacteria objectives in the state. We appreciate your staff's working with us on that. This is just the different basin plans of the state have different ways of measuring bacteria indicators to protect swimming beneficial uses. And there was a recent update at the federal level of the scientific basis for protection of water contact recreation. And we're using this opportunity to update on a statewide basis the bacteria objectives consistent with US EPA's latest scientific guidelines. But we're also looking at some tools that different regional boards have used to manage the issue, which is difficult. Indicators often give you a false positive. They can have confounding results in the environment. And so, you know, we don't want to have false positive drive real-time decisions whether to close a beach or not, let alone, you know, the determination if something's impaired and a TMDL is needed. So this update will allow some tools like the use of the limited recreational use, beneficial use, and some specific definitions of that. Seasonal suspensions, you know, when things are dangerous to swim, you're not going to get exposure in those situations and that sort of thing. So that's underway. On trash, I just wanted to let everyone know about a new web page. We have the statewide trash implementation policy. We're going to control trash getting into the Pacific Ocean in this state, and we have a statewide program. It's something we're taking very seriously, and we have a web page to assist municipalities in complying with the State Water Board's trash policy. Recently, you know, there's a lot of interest in this region about recycled water. We did a survey update that showed that we recycle about 750,000 acre feet per year. So we increased a little bit relative to 2009, which was more like 650,000. So it's not staggering. You know, we don't quite recycle 1 million acre feet. But actually, we've because of the financing we've done recently, we expect a big jump, an uptick. And that was spurred on by a national authorization in the SRF program in 2014. And so, you know, the State Water Board moved on that, and we expect a lot more recycled water implemented around the state. Concurrent with that, we're updating the recycled water policy to kind of think beyond landscape irrigation and all the, you know, the potable reuse projects around the state and other, you know, agricultural use of recycled water and that sort of thing. So we're updating the policy in the March timeframe next year, and as part of that, we've reconvened the expert panel of scientists to review constituents of emerging concern within recycled water to make sure we have the latest science informing our surveillance as we make more use of this resource, making sure that we're not having an unintended consequences on water quality. And so on July 19th, we reconvened that panel. It was a webinar. I attended via web. I don't know if other folks here did. Very, very exciting. But a good discussion there. And this is setting the stage for, in many parts of our state, maybe not so much here, but the really serious consideration of direct potable reuse, where you take wastewater and get it into the drinking water system more directly than in the indirect versions of groundwater recharge and surface water augmentation of reservoirs, which we're taking up a workshop in a week and a half to continue that discussion of those regulations. We expect to adopt those regulations before the end of the year on reservoir augmentation using recycled water. So I want to check my checklist real quick, because I know you've got a lot ahead on your agenda. We did adopt the 123 TCP, the trichloropropane maximum contaminant level. It was our first as the State Water Board with our drinking water division. And that's been set at 5 parts per trillion. This is a chemical that is a synthesized chemical. It doesn't occur in nature, and that's why it has such a low maximum contaminant level. And it has, and it's a known carcinogen. According to the state of California, at the federal level, it's a suspected carcinogen as far as, you know, its official determination. We did withdraw the chromium-6 MCL because of a court order, a court decision in May. So we officially withdrew the chromium-6 MCL. There's not a national chromium-6 MCL, but it was on the grounds of the economic analysis. Some issues with that, and we respect that decision, and so we're going to go back and look at the court's direction and do our best to update the economic analysis and come up with a different or the same proposal for the MCL. And, you know, the process will work itself out. We've learned a lot on Chrome 6 and what's treatable in the interim. You know, since 2014, when it was adopted, there's been a lot of technological advances on Chrome 6 treatment. And so that will be brought to bear in this decision that is before us. So we're going to be putting that as a priority. Wanted to acknowledge your work here on the Upper Elk River Sediment TMDL. That came to the State Board this month, and we made some suggestions, working closely with your staff, to tighten up the connection between the TMDLs and the implementation. I won't go into detail because I think you'll hear more about that on your agenda today, but we appreciate your hard work in that effort and hope that our decision helps support your work with the stakeholders in that difficult watershed. You know, this week we took up a workshop on the supplemental environmental projects, you know, that are part of enforcement actions. We're updating the policy from 2009 based on our experience as regional and state boards and enforcement program. It wasn't very controversial. There's only one speaker. But we recognize the value of supplemental environmental projects for the regions and the local communities. And so just wanted to give you a heads up that we're updating that policy. SGMA, remember Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, we had a big deadline. We had to form groundwater sustainability agencies by June 30th, 2017 in high and medium priority groundwater basins around the state, which number 127. I don't know if you knew that. I got that one, 127. And we got an update from the Department of Water Resources and our staff that work in ORPP on the Groundwater Management Unit, is what we call it, the GMU in the state board. And what's the punchline here? We're covered. The state's covered. The state, there's not going to be very much state water board intervention. There are these fringe areas. And I'm not talking about the people who live there. I mean, just the fringe. Yeah. It's sort of a mapping artifact. I think, you know, it's amazing. There might be 40 wells in the whole state of California that aren't covered under groundwater sustainability agencies. So I just want to hand it, you know, just you have to give public credit to the local, you know, the county governance, the water districts, the stakeholders have really... I guess they're really scared of the idea of the state water board running their groundwater basin. So they got their act together. We talked about it, though. You know, having a credible threat was important, and we did. We set up the fee structure and the programmatic expectations, and lo and behold, everyone formed a GSA in the whole state and didn't really overlap very much or rectified those. But you know, the hard work is ahead. As you know, putting together the groundwater sustainability plans is what this is really about, and we've talked about what we think that's going to take, and we'll be looking at that. And so I used the number 127. Well, guess how many GSAs have decided to form? Around 290. And so we talked about this, you know, is this the right level of governance for groundwater? And when you get to the point of groundwater sustainability plans, you know, are we going to have issues with GSAs working together cooperatively? And I think as this unfolds over the next 3 years, because 2020 is when we're really going to be seeing these come in, we'll probably see some rearrangement of governance as we move forward, you know, just the practicality of it. But as you know, I worry about fragmentation of water governance, and so we'll be watching that. But it's generally very good news, and there even in those fringe areas, we may have opportunity to get folks lined up with existing GSAs. Okay, well, I think I've covered a lot here, and of course, I've not covered a lot, but I wanted to just give you that little update, and hope to see you over at the Water Quality Coordinating Committee in October. But if not, I understand, and we'll stay in touch. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. It's always good to get an update from the State Board. Questions or comments for Steve, Mr. Corbett?
Just two quick comments. First of all, that's an exceptional record for SGMA. I think you ought to be proud, even if it was the threat of you that created it. In every water district I went to, they were talking about the imminent state board takeover. So they definitely had concerns at maintaining local control. Up in our neck of the woods, our water district and the water districts are quite opposed to the tax on water, and, you know, from their standpoint, run the revenuers out of town. But I wonder, does the State Board have a position on that either way?
Well, I need a little more specificity on the tax on water.
The water for some of the regulations on groundwater. There's a bill up before.
I'm not familiar with it offhand. Yeah.
So that's probably a sign and not a well-developed position.
Yeah, because I hasn't run. We get our legislative director does bill analyses that then we all review as board members, and I haven't seen anything like that.
And they sometimes don't take bills likely to pass versus unlikely to pass.
Right.
A little bit more sophisticated system. So.
Yeah. And, you know, there's later today, I'm actually going to Sacramento to talk about the affordable, safe water for disadvantaged communities and the use of our authorities to encourage consolidation of agencies to be able to serve safe drinking water, you know. And so this is a statewide discussion. You know, I don't take a strong position one way or the other, but there are disadvantaged communities that don't have enough resources to provide the human right to water, and we have to come up with some solutions on how we create revenue to create this public safety net.
Okay. I had one other comment, the chair, I forgot. I just wanted to say our staff were exceptionally gracious and informative on helping me with the marijuana preparation, and so they should be thanked for that.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. One thing just occurred to me. I wanted to make sure that you knew that on Monday night, August 28th, we are holding a public hearing here in Santa Rosa on the Russian River emergency regulations for the tributaries to support coho salmon during the drought. And we're going to give a public presentation from 5:30 p.m. to 7 at the place on Maple Street. It's the Sonoma County Veterans Memorial Auditorium, and it's 5:30 p.m. Monday, August 28th. And I'm planning to be there, but we're going to give a technical presentation on the data that we receive from shallow well pumpers and diverters from Dutchville Creek, Mill Creek, Mark West Creek, and Green Valley Creek, and to give a technical presentation on what we've learned there about water use by agriculture and residential waterbed budget type information that we learned.
Fantastic. Steve, can I ask you, remind me, the State Board working on the general cannabis order permit, what's the time frame of that?
Ah, yes, I should have that handy. Let's see.
September 17th is comments, October 18th is vote.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got.
There it is.
It's happening really quick. I think we're looking at a hearing in December as planned, you know, to adopt or at least have a workshop. So it's very rapid timeline. You mentioned July of next year, and I appreciate the comments. You know, the calendar dates sometimes don't work real well with the on-the-ground operations, so that's always something that we can take into account with comments.
What is interesting in how fast that that program, I believe we were one of the first as an agency to go, and it's just amazing to me how fast and how rapid the changes come and how the assimilation into various, whether it be Department of Food and Ag or others, state board, regional boards, and other agencies have integrated and tried to integrate then and get ahead of the process. It's rapid change with a lot going on, and I appreciate the State Board part of that. Hey, one other question, too, that's come up to me on water right reporting, which I'm sure you're intimately knowledgeable about, but on the ERIM system, it's all electronic now, and what's come up is in the last year in the electronic reporting system for water rights is there's a question on there now asking if the water was used for cannabis, which is kind of interesting because I've actually dealt with some folks in my work life in that reporting and water right work and wondering the consequences then of checking yes if, in fact, that is yes and the purpose of that. And then also using – I've dealt with some folks that have a small irrigation registration in the North Coast, which was not crop designated. And that question's on there. So the question has come about to me, is there a purpose or consequence then or a restriction of using water right, say, just for conversation's sake, in a county north of here, or Sonoma County for that matter, where cannabis is being grown under an existing water right? Is there any prohibition or legality in using an existing water right for cannabis now, say for a irrigation registration?
It's a good question. I think this is laying the groundwork for the different set of requirements that will come out of the cannabis program. There will be one of the specific proposals is to have a forbearance period. You know, that's very specific calendar months. You cannot divert to grow cannabis. It is, April to October or that sort of thing. And so it does, you know, there will be a different set of requirements. You know, in the long run, I think we all share the goal of harmonizing requirements. But, Chris Kerrigan, who's kind of oversees, is a good spokesperson for this program, has explained cannabis is different, you know, in terms of it being an evolving program. And so it makes sense to make that designation. Does it affect the water right? If you have a riparian water right, you know.
And by the way, Steve, these are appropriate. So it's, and it's interesting. And we could talk about it offline. It's just interesting in how, you know, water right, I know it's working when we have had, I think it was Rick Rogers, I believe, if I remember that name right, from Water Rights, came in and spoke to us about the evolution and development of some water right legislation. It's not legislation would be the right word, but a category specific to cannabis, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Well, appropriative, you've got a different, you know, it's a different set. You know, the riparian is one thing for forbearance. Appropriative,
right.
Then, you know, and you just have to follow the requirements of your permit or license.
The standard conditions.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate
Thanks.
It very much.
Thanks, folks.